Hello, welcome back to the 20-minute hit. Once again, trying to uncover a few more talking points from around the global world of sport. I'm Ollie Wilson, as always, and today I've been chatting to a very fine fella, another one of my TalkSport colleagues, and a guy who knows plenty about the world of sport in general. In particular today, though, talking a bit of rugby with him. This was always going to be tough because I only just found out a few days ago that Eddie Jones is the head coach of the England national team, of course in rugby union, and that the Italian head coach is Conor O'Shea. So when you don't even have the bare minimum at your fingertips, talking about sport's pretty difficult. So I apologise if I came off a little bit slack in this podcast, but I wanted to talk to Russ about what we saw in the Six Nations about a week ago or so now, when Italy took on England, and this idea of the Italians trying not to ruck and instead sitting in an offside position to disrupt the English game. It really caused problems for them for the first half as well, for the English, who were expected to roll over the Italians. Second half was a touch more dominant from the Red Roses, if you will. So we got talking about that, my struggles with rugby and a few other bits as well. So here it is. Here's Russ Hargreaves on the 20-minute hit. Russell Hargreaves, TalkSport 2 and TalkSport presenter, host as well of the Arsenal Weekly podcast, so you may lose a few listeners for me, not that I've got that many at this point anyway. What's by the way, the affiliation with Arsenal? Have you always been a fan? Are you just happy to be on something like the Arsenal Weekly podcast as a fan, or is it very much, is that a job for you, so to speak?
The latter, very much so. I've become an Arsenal sympathiser, perhaps, over my time working for the club, but no affiliation to Arsenal whatsoever over the years. No, it's my local team for where I'm from, and Newcastle I follow through my dad, and very much rugby apart from that with Harlequin. So no, I've got my clubs, and Arsenal's not been one of them. So no opportunity came to work for them a couple of years ago when they got in touch with me. So it's been a professional arrangement, but one where I do have to say I kind of have grown to have a strong affinity to the club as a result of the work. So it's kind of gone that way where, yeah, I do look out for their results. Obviously hope they do well, partly from a professional angle, but yeah, I actually do like them to do well now. It'll be in my array, in my team of teams, definitely.
That will happen when you work with a club for a long period of time and you get to know the style, a bit more about the players, things like that. You know, knowledge breeds a kind of an affinity to it. So I will not begrudge you the Arsenal kind of affiliation and sympathy per se. Interesting time to be an Arsenal fan as well, but we won't talk about that today. We've already done football this week at some point. I want to talk to you about rugby union, the Six Nations, of course. I mean, you're very much involved in and have to stay abreast of plenty of what's going on in world sport because of your job doing the breakfast show on TalkSport 2 and the kind of broad topics that you get on TalkSport and TalkSport 2 as a host. But rugby is one of your sports per se, we would have said.
Yeah, absolutely. It's something that I followed for many, many years, ever since I kind of moved down to London as a young journalist in the sort of early 2000s. So I've had a good 15-odd years working closely in rugby, and it's a very enjoyable sport to work in. I've got to say, you get excellent access to the players and management. It's a very respectful sport in every sense, particularly in terms of how the journalists are kind of brought on board to be very much kind of in there and aware of what's going on in the inner sanctum of the clubs. And that's a really good journalistic challenge that I very much enjoy and appreciate, and really kind of try and thrive on that access. And yeah, I've been talking about England reporter for a good while now, including at the World Cup a couple of years ago, for all of its disappointment as England crashed out at the group stage. But that was a great experience. And yeah, over the years, I've had the pleasure of covering England for TalkSport, and obviously an awful lot of the Aviva Premiership as well through Talking Rugby, the agency that I work with, and obviously directly with TalkSport too, doing some of their commentaries alongside Andrew McKenna as well. So yeah, you're spot on. Rugby has been a major part of my career for many years, and hopefully that will long may that continue.
It's a tough life, isn't it, Russ? It's a real tough life. Getting in with the players, in with the clubs, and covering a sport that you absolutely love. Let's talk about then what happened last weekend in the England-Italy game in the Six Nations, a game that England, as almost everybody's almost expected to trounce Italy, considered very much the whipping boys, despite them not finishing bottom of the Six Nations group now for a few years. And then the Italians throw this spanner in the works with what's been described as Ruckgate, if you will. And I mean, this is one of the first rugby games I've actually sat down and watched as a fan and paid attention to, because rugby isn't necessarily one of my sports per se. That's one of the problems of being friends with people that are big rugby fans. You eventually have to sit down and try and take the game in. The English team didn't know how to operate with this tactic posed by the Italians, and seemed at times not even to know the rules about what they could and couldn't do during that first half. And Eddie Jones at least able to make changes at half time for England, and eventually a dominant win. But the Italians, as I say, really threw this spanner in the works. Can you just break down to us what exactly this whole Ruckgate was about, first and foremost?
Yeah, I think that's the place to start. And then after that, we'll maybe sort of move on to some of the ramifications and I think some of the motivations behind it from both sides as well. But ostensibly, when you play rugby union, you have what is the tackle area, which is where a player one-on-one is tackled by the opposition. The ball is then loose and can be competed for. And at that point, no offside rules apply. You can effectively come in from anywhere on the field and basically try and win that ball back as long as it's a tackle. But if you have two players from either team engaged or more, it's what is called a ruck, where you have a series of players all fighting for the ball on the floor. And at that point, very strict rules of engagement apply about how you can win that ball back, where you can do it from. And there's a fair bit more besides, but that's the chief point about it. And what Italy did is basically every time there was a tackle, they didn't commit any more players to try and win that ball back on the floor or protect that ball, depending who was the tackler, who was the tacklee from the two teams at that point. So all of a sudden, you've got England expecting Italian players to come flying in and then engage in a normal ruck, the normal breakdown battle that would apply in any game of rugby, chiefly, of course, in a Six Nations international battle at Twickenham. But England bamboozled by the fact that the Italians were just standing off and keeping a line away from the breakdown. And England couldn't work out what to do. And it was a very clever tactic from the Italians. It's not new. It's been done in the past, but infrequently. And the key thing, really, to be honest, Ollie, is the fact that Italy managed to do this and do it so well, because all it takes is one player in the heat of battle to forget that tactic that's been drilled in over the week. And it would have been an alien tactic, because it's completely against what a rugby player would normally do by choice in that situation. They do want to dive in and get involved and get their hands dirty and try and fight for that ball. So we've had a whole week of training with, as you alluded to, not the best squad, the weakest in the Six Nations. So Conor O'Shea, the head coach, good friend of mine, been chatting to him a fair bit in Italy about this since, alongside his coaching staff assistants, Brendan Venter, who would have been key on this, the South African, and the former England assistant and centre Mike Capp. Between the three of them, Ollie, they drilled this quite brilliantly to have it working and working on a near flawless basis for the first hour, hour and a bit of the game. So fair play, I would say, to them. The biggest problem was that England couldn't react, couldn't work out what to do. And the reason this tactic isn't employed all the time and done week in, week out is, A, people would become desensitised to it and they'll find ways around it. But also, there are fairly obvious ways around it already. If you know what you're doing, there are no laws of engagement at this point to the tackle. So basically, just pick the ball up and run. Go. Go straight through the middle, ball in hand, or get what's called a maul, which is a driving set of players who are on their feet rather than on the floor. Get one of those going straight through the middle. Make the most of the fact that there aren't tacklers, there aren't defenders straight in front of you. Use that space and railroad your way through. And that's exactly what England did later in the game when they finally got those tactics sorted. But the big problem for me is that England weren't able to adapt on the hoof to the tactic. And we had the rather embarrassing situation at one point where we've got the England captain, his assistant, and indeed another senior player all going up to the ref and asking the ref what they should do. And the referee, quite rightly saying, Dylan Hartley to Owen Farrell and James Haskell, look, I'm not your coach. I am the referee. I suggest you ask your coach at halftime what you do. This is not my job or my place. I am merely refereeing by the letter of the law. Italy's head coaching collective had gone to the ref pre-match, talked to him about their intended tactic, asked him if it was okay. He'd said yes, there is a slight grey area, which they clarified, and onwards and upwards. So my stance is well done to the Italians. And as much as I love England, I love Eddie Jones, I do a lot of work with Eddie Jones, I just think he massively overreacted. I think he was pretty disrespectful to the Italians as a whole, not giving them any credit for managing to carry out what we'd said and do it so well. And the other fact is, very much like someone like Jose Mourinho with Manchester United, classic deflection tactic. What Eddie Jones does is he grabs a headline, he takes a media conference post-match by the scruff of the neck and comes out with an agenda. The agenda of Eddie was go hard at the Italians, blame them for being this kind of death knell of rugby, of bringing the game into question, of dragging the sport through the mud. Whereas actually what he was hoping is that by doing that and making that the agenda of the media conference, he wouldn't then have lots of awkward questions about why his own players, his own skipper and an assistant, were so clueless about how to deal with it at the time. And you know what? It worked. And it's only in the more recent days that people have gone down that route. And England captain Dylan Hartley was questioned about it this week, funnily enough, and did frankly say, you know what, I should have handled that a huge amount better. I wasn't reactive enough. My own grasping of the laws and how to kind of work around them wasn't good enough. And it's something we need to deal with. So a learning curve for England as much as anything. And so that is pretty much my standpoint on it.
It's that ability to change tactics on the fly that really, as you mentioned there, kind of let down England again, from what I heard from friends in the pub where I was watching it and people around me. But that inability to adjust to it was pretty shocking to fans, I think, on the weekend. In terms of the outcry against the Italians, though, it seems peculiar to me that the Italians. As you say, it's not a tactic that's used very often, this, but it's one that's completely legitimate, well within the boundaries and the rules of the game. Yet people chastising the Italians for using this approach. You mentioned Eddie Jones using it as perhaps a deflective tactic in his press conference, but fans of the sport in general frustrated by it, as were the England players on the pitch. Why were people getting so up in a hoorah about it? Because the Italians, as I mentioned, are generally expected to be the whipping boys. There's been discussion that they might be actually moved out of the Six Nations and somebody like Georgia come in instead to replace them, have made great strides in their international rugby kind of careers as a nation and perhaps considered the sixth best side in Europe. So for the Italians to not be the whipping boys by utilising this tactic, and everybody getting in a hoorah about it, it seems rather unorthodox, because it's like saying, oh, we're tired of you being the whipping boys, we want you out. All right, we'll use this tactic so we're not the whipping boys and we don't get destroyed every game. Oh, you've done that. Oh, we don't like that. We want you to go back to being the guys that we can just roll over 80 minutes.
No, I think you're spot on. And Conor O'Shea, as I mentioned before, the Italian head coach, I know very well from his time as director of rugby with my team, Harlequins, and we've worked together for years. And we had a long chat on TalkSport 2 on Sportsdown, our breakfast show pre-match on Thursday live, and chatted just by text after the match as well, funnily enough. And Conor's bang on with what he said, which is when other teams employ this tactic, they are lauded as being these clever masters of the dark arts who push the rules to the boundaries in a positive sense. The Australians did it against Ireland in the North International at one point. The Waikato Chiefs in New Zealand in Super Rugby, the big domestic championship down there, do this regularly as well. It's been employed by one or two teams here in the European Champions Cup as well. So it is something that we do come across. But when Italy do it, it's suddenly, as you rightly say, seemed to be this dark and dismal tactic. And Eddie Jones was obviously going on about how it could have major effects at grassroots level if suddenly club teams wander out one day and don't start to engage at ruck time. And is that going to be like a huge death knell to the actual grassroots game? Again, I don't think that is the case, because it's so hard to do and do correctly, going back to my point earlier, on a sustained basis throughout a game. You're going to have one prop forward who's perhaps not the smartest, who's going to come diving in 25 minutes in and get confused. And as soon as one does that, the entire tactic falls apart and you're just cannon fodder. So, yeah, my feeling is as we've discussed generally, that it won't ever be a massive tactic used too much in games, because people are aware. And you know what? They'll be all the more aware because of all the headlines and the fact we're still talking about this basically a week on. It goes to show what a major story it is and how in-depth it's being covered and how much it's in the sporting psyche, let alone the rugby union psyche. So I feel the teams on the whole will react now, know what to do, which makes the tactic all the more, what would be the word, ineffective moving forward. Perhaps you do it occasionally for 5 minutes in a game, maybe just don't engage at the odd ruck, catch the opponents by surprise on the odd occasion. That, to me, would have much more sustainability moving forward. I don't think ever again, in such a high-profile match as a Six Nations encounter at Twickenham, would we see a team either have the gumption, the ability, or perhaps the kind of nerve these days to try and do it for too long, because it's now too clear and I think it's too open and people fully understand what to do moving forward. But it's been a fascinating debate, Ollie, I tell you, and England moving forward. We know that even though they're on this national record winning run, 17 games, one shy of tying the world record, which they could do, which New Zealand achieved a couple of years ago, they could do that again Scotland this weekend in the Calcutta Cup match. If they win that game, they could then break that world record potentially as they go for back-to-back Grand Slams in Ireland in the final round of the competition the week after. Yeah, that's if. But England keep winning. They keep getting the job done, but they're still a team in evolution. There is still room for improvement. And what's frustrating is that for England, I've covered most of that record winning run. I think I've covered all but three or four of those 17 games. England generally have got better at reacting on the hoof. If they're in trouble, they react early and get the job done. Elliot Daly's red card against Argentina in the autumn, behind early doors against the likes of Australia, South Africa, slow out of the box, tactically struggling. But they're a team who, since the World Cup early departure, have learnt under Eddie Jones how to adapt in-house, not even wait till half-time, fix things out on the field through their own kind of diligence and their own sense and knowledge of the game. This was a far, far cry from that, for that first 40, 50 minutes of that match last weekend.
Russ, I know you've got to run and catch a train, so I'll tell you what, I'll let you go for now. There's a couple more questions I want to fire at you, but we'll have to wait for another time. Really appreciate you, man, having a chat with us and for guiding me by the hand through the dark, terrible world of rugby union and the Six Nations.
Appreciate that, my friend. I'm going to dash and get that very train, and more than happy to talk to you again at another point too, mate, and we can chew the fat on a few other things.
Cheers, Russ. Have a good one, mate.
No worries, pal.
Big thanks there to Russell Hargreaves joining us on the show, TalkSport 2 and TalkSport presenter, big rugby man, Arsenal weekly podcast host as well. You can find him on Twitter at @Russ_Hargreaves, @Russ_Hargreaves. That's HARGREAVES, if you're wondering how to spell it. Great insight into the Six Nations there. Didn't know he was so well connected with some of the coaches, and certainly a fantastic breakdown of the Italian tactics as well there on the show. So really appreciate his time and his ability to just chat rugby. I mean, what, I got two questions in there, that was about it, maybe three. You can just let the man go. Absolutely phenomenal discussion from Russ, and hopefully a little bit of insight into the Six Nations that finishes on March the 18th. It's got a weekend off, and back on March the 10th with Wales against Ireland, followed by Italy against France and England against Scotland, and then the final fixtures as well. Scotland, Italy, France, Wales and Ireland against England, as I say, all on March the 18th, those final three fixtures. Wouldn't have minded chatting to him a little bit about Dylan Hartley, the England captain, who had an absolutely horrific high tackle about a month or so ago, received a suspension for it. And many people saying he should have been dismissed as England captain. He's got that sort of tackle, that challenge in his locker, many think, and has a tendency to push the boundaries sometimes. I'd have loved to have chat to him about that. And generally the state of English rugby at the moment as well. Eddie Jones in charge, if he's actually taking this side on the right path, perhaps to another World Cup victory. But we'll have to leave that for another time. And I'm sure I'll want to chat to Russ about the Lions tour as well that's taking place in New Zealand this summer. That's it for the 20-minute hit. Really big thanks to Russ, to Jeff Peters, who joined us on the show earlier in the week, and of course to Christian McLaren as well of LAFA. Really hope you've enjoyed the quick short bursts of sporting discussion that we've been able to provide on the show this week. More coming next week. The NFL Combine's on, of course. Arsenal take on Liverpool in the Premier League this weekend, which is a huge encounter, particularly after Liverpool's loss against Leicester City that we spoke about earlier on in the week. F1 testing has started as well. Problems for McLaren in the early going. They always seem to have problems at the moment. They are not a force in Formula One right now. Very frustrating for them. I mean, is anybody going to beat Mercedes, even with Rosberg gone? You know, Hamilton, it's basically his title to take now. But we'll chat about the changes in Formula One, rule changes, and as they try to put some of the excitement back into the sport once again. It's been pretty drab for the last few years, I have to say. I don't think I've really been interested in F1 since Brawn won it a few years ago, with Ross Brawn having that stupendous car at the start of the season. Then everybody caught up with them, and it was a case of trying to reel in Jenson Button, who was the early title leader, and nobody was able to quite do it. That was a really interesting one. But the Vettel years at Red Bull were very much like the Ferrari Schumacher years, and as is the Hamilton Rosberg Mercedes dominance, of course, with Rosberg retiring after his world title last year. So we'll get onto that. There's Tony Bellew against David Haye as well this weekend, so hopefully chat some boxing with somebody next week. All that and more coming on the podcast. Big thanks to all the guests from this week, as I say, Russ Hargreaves, Jeff Peters and Christian McLaren. We'll be back next week with hopefully plenty more sports talk. See you then.